Hello, my name is Mike Goldman, and welcome to On The Mic. Very special guest today is a young man by the name of Josh Wade. Let's hear it from him.
Thank you.
Round of applause from the studio audience of one, two. There's a dude over there. Hey, mate. So it's my podcast and yours. I feel so honored to be on yours and kind of a parasite under yours because you've got a gazillion follows than me.
That's okay. That's what it's all about. We're here on my podcast as well. It's a dual podcast, the Josh Wade Show.
Yeah.
It's the first time we've done something like this as well. So hopefully you guys can jump over to Mike's stuff and suck some shit out of him as well. But
suck me all you like.
This is different. I don't know how this is going to be like we're interviewing each other.
Well, I figured, we'd talk a little bit about me because it's my favourite subject. And we could talk about you.
That's my favourite subject.
And it's one of my favourite subjects because I'm a big fan. Like, I love the conspiracy podcast.
It's changed. It's not conspiracy anymore.
I'm talking about in the past.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the Josh Wade Show or whatever you like to call it now. And all the cunny stuff that you did all those years ago was fucking hilarious.
Okay.
And so cool. And everything that you're doing now and how you changed from cunny to the launch of Josh Wade 2.0 and your tours and how everything's going. And there's so much stuff that you talk about, which I love in a conspiracy sense and also current topics and things that are going on. So I want to talk to you about what's going on with the Weinsteins. I want to talk about the Trumps. I want to talk about Lisa Wilkinson, leaving the Today Show because she's not getting paid as much as Carl. There's so much cool stuff that we can go over. But how are you, man? What's going on?
I'm good. This has taken a while to do. So we filmed one of these in Sydney.
Yeah.
Couple of weeks ago and the cameras were fucked and everything just sort of went down. Wasn't meant to be. I had no voice either.
That's right.
That was amazing.
We're at a friend of mine place called Margie Brown's, mutual friend. Margie was my producer on a show called Big Brother Up Late, which I used to host. So she was the lady talking into my ear saying, Mike, they're all asleep, you need to talk. And I just have to go, nothing's going on here or in the house. You have to sit here and watch me for the next 2 hours and she'd just be feeding stuff into my ear. But she's one of the best producers in Australia and a really good friend of mine. We're sitting there doing this podcast and you had no voice because you did like four or five before with like Gretel Colleen.
But I didn't have a voice when I got to Sydney either.
Oh, no.
I had to hustle through.
What's going on? Were you partying or what?
That's what Gretel said. I wasn't partying. I just woke up and I thought, who has no voice? Like, who wakes up and actually has no voice? That's got to be rare.
Well, me the other day... Because I'm the Sydney Kings courtside announcer and I basically have to scream at the crowd when the team's down a few points because it really makes a difference when the crowd's behind the team to help them get it across the line. And the next day I had to do all these voices for a new show coming up called The Real Penguins of Sydney for Sea Life Aquarium. So because I'm a voiceover guy, that's how I make my money most of the time. If I can make money out of podcasts.
Not yet.
But not yet. And so I had to do all these voices of these penguins and I'm like, couldn't really do it. But so we're going to redo that in the next couple of days. But, it's a tough thing when you, you're an MC and you're hosting shows and you need to get your voice okay. But one thing that always works for me, my dad's a voiceover guy as well, a radio announcer. He uses this stuff called propolis. You ever heard that?
So like some Alex Jones fucking supplement shit?
Yeah. So if you would like to buy some of the Mike Goldman and Josh Wade propolis, all you need to do is go to our website. It's actually, you can get it in a spray or a lozenge.
And what is it?
I think it's the outside of the beehive.
Right.
And apparently it keeps out a lot of the bacteria and stuff from bees when they're...
Does he take that every day? If he's on the radio every day.
Not every day, no. Just with your voices playing up and a bit funny. And steam as well.
Steam helps.
Breathing in some steaming, it gets the air into your lungs and the steam into your lungs and the water onto your
So
your
bongs
vocal
aren't
cords.
Bongs aren't the way to go.
Bongs are good. as much weed as you can possibly smoke. That was the other thing I was getting to. Preferably bucket bongs.
Bucket bongs, yeah. They're a bit lighter on the lungs.
You ever had a bucket bong?
I have. Have you had a bucket bong?
The first weed I ever smoked in my life was when I was 14.
Yeah.
And I was at a petrol station in Brookvale and I just went in to pay for a paddle pop.
Yeah.
And my mate was in there and he said, I just had a bucket bong. I go, what the fuck's that? He goes, I don't know. The dude who runs a petrol station's got him out the back. You want one? I'm like, I have a bucket bong. What the fuck's that?
And a paddle pop.
paddle pop. This is fucked up.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, I had this bucket bong. I'm coughing like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Next thing you know, I wake up a few hours later on the floor of this petrol station.
Oh, it clocked
it's
you
still,
out.
Still fully clothed.
Yeah.
And I got home at like 10 o'clock at night. My parents were like, where are you? What do you mean? I'm worried sick about you. Oh, I've just been at my friend's studying. Well, you didn't have mobile phones back then, so they can't call you.
Yeah.
And went, oh, can I go to sleep, go to bed? I don't feel very well. So never really touched it again.
They're terrifying. I mean, I used to smoke quite a bit. I don't really touch it anymore. But I mean, I remember having my first bucket bong and going down on it. It's like some Harvey Weinstein shit.
Sucking the bong. Yeah, sucking the bucket. Yeah, essentially, what I remember from it, it's like an orange juice bottle with like the hose inside of it with a little bit of weed in the side but the bottom's cut off.
Yeah.
And it's in a bucket of water and you have to suck the top of the bong so that all of the smoke.
See, you were doing it wrong.
Oh, really?
Well, the better way to do it is to get... You learn a lot on this show. The best way to do it is you get a 2-litre bottle of Coke, cut it off there because it's got a better dome than a little orange juice box. Better dome. And then you put the cone piece in the in the lid on the top.
Yeah.
So you cut a little hole into the lid, you put it in, light it, and then obviously the bottle thing's dunked into the water, and as you pull the bottle up, the suction slowly sucks the thing, and then you just go down on it. So do a Harvey Weinstein, you're down.
Wow.
And I remember going down and like trying to inhale it all in, and it just felt like my head exploded from just the amount of smoke that had just instantly gone in.
It's not good. I mean, if you're going to smoke weed and you just really want to get fucked up, I mean, that's the way to do it. And I mean, you've been an advocate of pot smoking over the years, and you've even done a documentary on it.
Yeah, but see, I'm two ways about it. I was out with someone this morning talking about it, and I actually don't think cannabis was ever used meant to smoke. I mean, if you were going outside now and you took one of those eucalyptus leaves and just started sucking that in and was doing, you know, sucking in the smoke from that for 20 years, that's not healthy. Like it was made to be consumed in, you know, to be vaporized, to be boiled down to oil. Maybe not boil's not the right word, but do you know what I mean? Like there's components within it, not just the THC part, but the CBD part, that's all the medical qualities, is what the epileptic children are taking, all these.
Yeah.
That's where the magic lies.
Glaucoma as well, apparently it helps your eyesight.
Mate, it helps a lot of things, and it's sort of irrefutable. So, you know, the 23-year-old that I am now is much different to the 19-year-old that was just like,
experimenting with crazy shit.
Let's all just go and smoke bongs. I don't think the world
19,
should be
you're
that.
A late starter. I was 14.
Oh, no, I was 14, but when I really got into it was 19.
I went to Freshwater High School on the North Shore of Sydney. And
that sounds like a shitty ABC show.
Oh, man, yeah, Freshwater High.
Yeah.
And public school, because I've been kicked out of the private schools before that. And I was only there for a year because I actually got kicked out of there too before I went to St. Paul's. And they would be smoking weed in the playground at that school, the Kiwi kids up at the back of the playground. But it was rampant, and that was actually one of the kids who's in the petrol station. Like, come on, go and have a bucket bong. I'm like, yeah, whatever, I want to be cool like you. But is it affected your brain in any way? It's clearly affected mine.
Yeah, I think it's mine ultimately. I think the good part about what you just said is that these days it's not weed. Like, kids aren't at the back doing weed. Like, there's kids going to school taking fucking acid. Yeah. They're smoking ice in some places.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. I would much rather, if I was the principal of a school or if I was a father.
It was just weed, yeah.
It was just a joint. Like, you know, fuck, that's okay. But with the mind-altering stuff, I think that my brain is wired much differently to what it was. And it's not the best thing to be smoking copious amounts of cannabis while your brain's still developing, when you're 18, 19.
Because it's a depressant as well, and you've had problems with depression, and do you think that's added to it?
I used to probably try and trick myself into thinking that it was helping it, and I don't think it made it any worse, but I think the fact I was mixing it with antidepressants and drinking sometimes probably didn't help. I think if I maybe just consumed the CBD part of it and was, you know, taking that as sort of a way to, because you don't get high, it doesn't have the psychoactive properties in it. You just sort of take it and it's therapeutic on that level. But I think it's brought me a lot of good, because I feel like I look at the world in such a different way. Like, everyone looks at it from one angle, and I feel like I'm a part of a percentage of people that sort of can look at it from this angle and go, hey, look at what's going on in this angle of the whatever the fuck I'm talking
spectrum.
About. So, but I mean, it's caused
me... How do you feel now? So, do you still smoke it occasionally or is it just a fun thing?
Yeah, sometimes I will, but it's definitely...
I don't really, but I was at a party a few years ago with my mum.
Yeah.
And someone was passing around a joint and I'm like, oh, no, no, thanks, I don't really smoke it. And mum snatched it out of their hands and went, Michael, you're so fucking straight. Like, where the fuck?
Yeah.
Mum! Slow down. She will be watching this as well. Yeah. She watches everything. Actually, she's
your only Patreon.
She's my only sponsor on Patreon.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's great.
Patreon.com/onthemic. Thank you, Mum. $5 a month. Yeah. It keeps me going. So she's probably just pulled out the sponsorship for that. So
now
we're struggling if you'd like to help us. But let's not not talk about the weed too much because we've got so much other stuff that I want to talk to you about as well. Yeah. I don't want to dwell on that. But if people would like to see that documentary, it's great. It's got Darren Hinch in it. You're hanging out in Nimbin and I think it's Mardi Gras is the festival you're at. And there's a lot of people that are for it being legalized in Australia. And it was really good to get their take on it and see how the police handle it in Nimbin was really interesting as well.
Yeah.
So where can people see that?
Just on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Josh Wade. But I mean, essentially it was a pilot for something that we want to do bigger. I don't know if I'd approach my documentaries in that. I think I was trying too hard to be serious.
Oh, man, it's awesome. It's so well done.
Oh, well,
You should do more of them. You have plans to do more docos?
Yeah, yeah, some really good shit as well.
Yeah, so right. What are you going to be sleep? More conspiracy documentaries? Are you going to be like Alex Jones and like hiding in the bushes at one of those Bilderberg parties?
I'd like to, but I also want to keep a career in show business. So I'll probably...
Do you think doing conspiracy podcasts, it can lose you a lot of work? And people go, oh, he's the conspiracy guy, I'm not interested.
Yeah, I've already experienced that. That's why we're changing the name of the show. For a multitude of reasons.
Yeah.
A lot of the episodes that we do on my podcast can be with, different celebrities, but then we have people that have got, a lot of really good things to say. Like we just interviewed a psychologist that was on here about mental health and male suicide, and putting that under the banner of conspiracy is, I feel, it's immature, but it's not doing me or the guest any favors by doing that. So, I mean,
it's a part of your evolution from Gunny. Josh Wade.
Putting
it all behind you.
We're doing the same show. We're doing the same show, but I just don't want to put any everything under the banner of conspiracy.
Because you don't only talk about conspiracy on it. I mean, you're talking about everything that's going on in the world at the same time. Yeah. But I do think it was great. And if people want to see it and see what happens with Darren Hinch and Nimbin and all the crazy hippies, it's worth having a look at.
I'd love to get Darren on the podcast. That's one.
Darren would be amazing. I can get Darren for you if you want.
Yeah, please
definitely
do.
Get you one-on-one with Darren.
Yeah. We've tried over and over again. We've sent him the clip that's got a million views on Facebook.
I know his agent. Just leave it with me.
He's got an agent.
I'll sort it out. Yeah,
he's a senator.
She's a beautiful Greek girl.
Great.
She actually used to work with us on Big Brother as well for a long time.
All right, there
you go. And actually, I won't go into how I know, but I'll get it as watch this as well and sort out an interview with Darren because I know that he'd love to speak to you again. I mean, I know that he spoke to you a little bit in the...
We saw him at the very end. We were actually packing up to leave and I saw him and went, finally, I've been trying to track you down all day. And I pulled him over and I said, can you do a quick interview? He goes, yeah. And we started doing it. And then all these people, it was just between me and him. And then about 50 to maybe 80 people gathered around us and we're like taking part in like this studio audience debate. And I'm a little bit embarrassed because I think I got too passionate and too fired up because it was not just Darren and weed. It was like everything I'd ever wanted to say to a politician. But
we've got a lot more politicians in Australia. We can line up plenty. Would you ever go into politics yourself?
No, never. No.
Why not?
People have asked me that.
You've got a lot to say.
Yeah, but I just don't think that the way that the system is, I don't think these politicians necessarily... can really make too much of a change.
But you, you look at someone like Peter Garrett who was singing about it for years and then he had a crack at politics and got in there and tried to make some changes. Do you think that's why he left and went back to the band? Because he realised...
Because he fucking sucked.
He couldn't do anything.
Because he was caught in a corrupted system that doesn't work. It doesn't work for the people. There's more power in people power and getting up and standing outside of something. That's what annoyed me about Nimbin. The one thing that annoyed me, I thought, everyone's here today, everyone's having a lot of fun, they're taking drugs, they're doing all these different things. No one in Canberra gives a fuck. No one in Canberra is sitting there today going, oh, the stoners are in Nimbin. Yeah. If fucking A million people can vote for Casey Donovan or someone on Australian Idol and spend money to do that. Get the fuck outside of Parliament House right now and stand up for things that actually fucking change your life.
Make a difference.
That's it. Mm. They're not going to do the job. They're not doing it. They want to keep their job so they can keep getting paid and fly fucking business class on Qantas, which I'm trying to do now. Qantas, if you'd like to sponsor us, please do. But otherwise, they don't. They don't. Maybe there's one or two in there or a few of them that kind of give a fuck, but they know as well that it's just such a fucking effort to try and get something through the system.
Mm. I mean, can I just do a quick voiceover just after everything you said? Written, spoken and authorised by Josh Wade for the Josh Wade Party of Australia. Mike Goldman speaking. I reckon, you know, you've got your whole life ahead of you. Maybe it's something that you'll consider when you're like 30 or 40 or something like that. But my my stepdad, David Joel, God rest his soul, he's not around anymore. He was in federal politics for about 30 years. He was the federal minister for administrative services. He was the shadow minister for tourism and aviation. And had so much to do when he was actually in Parliament and they were actually in the Liberal Party under John Howard. So much to do with, like, legislation in the country and, like, so many great things that they actually did and achieved. And, I mean, the gun control thing was one thing that that they got across the line. I mean, what do you think of that? I mean, the fact
that we
don't have as many guns in Australia anymore. If coming from a conspiracy point of view, you probably think we've taken all the guns off all the convicts in Australia so that we can control them in case they decide to take over.
No, I don't think so. I look past that argument a little bit because I go, like, even with the American stuff, it was put there, you know, in case the government gets tyrannical. At the end of the day, if every single American's carrying a fully automatic weapon, you're taking them weapons to a fucking drone fight. The game's over, they won. But at the same time, the difference between Australia and America and what sort of annoys me when I see these fucked up mass shootings that happen over there is, you know, you see on your news feed Australians going, they should have just banned the guns. They should have just banned the guns. Banned the guns, banned the guns. We did it here. It worked. You often see the comparison between Australia banning the guns and America not banning the guns and how there's never been a mass shooting here since blah, 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 blah. No, there's not. But all around the world, when you go have a look at places like the UK and stuff like that, which took all the guns, I mean, the cops don't have the guns over there either. Mm. The violent crime rate is still is higher. They're just not using weapons now. Yeah. Yes, it's much easier to go and shoot down a bunch of people with, you know, semi-automatic and fully automatic weapons. That's not good. But the problem in the US is not these fully automatic and semi-automatic weapons. The shootings that are happening in scale, when we really look at the big picture, it's gangbangers with handguns.
Yeah.
All right? These mass shootings are happening, obviously, with these high-power weapons. But at the end of the day, you go look at what happened in Las Vegas. It was an elite... Well... The weapons that he used were worth a lot of money. They're not just weapons. Yeah. He got a bunch of... What did he... It was a semi-automatic...
Can I tell you what I think?
Yeah, go. Don't steal my theory either.
But this is a theory that a lot of people are saying online, so I'm not sure, 100% sure if it's your theory, but...
I've trademarked it.
Like, this guy... I know the one that you're going to say. Yeah. But this guy, there's no way in hell he moved all of those guns up to his hotel room. None of the cameras show him moving all these bags of guns.
No cameras.
The cameras have all been deleted, you know, which is... That just says... red flags left, right and centre. Yeah. Come on. And everyone's saying there were second shooters. Mm-hmm. And, like, they had a security guard on Ellen the other day talking about how, you know, he got in there and overtook things. There's something not right about that guy as well. It was really weird.
Well, he just walked out of he was meant to go to Hannity, a show on Fox, and was put in a psych ward the day he got to LA to do the interview. I believe that's the story. But he was definitely put in the same psych ward that Kanye West was put in after he sort of went on this... remember when he was saying quite a few things on stage during his concert and he had to cancel the tour and got put in a psych ward because his personal trainer at his house had put him under, like rang up the whoever there, you know, 911 and said he was going crazy, and they put him under that, I forget what the actual code is, but they did it to Britney Spears as well, where
the person's gone crazy.
They're at risk of killing someone or themselves.
Suicide watch.
So we need the police, and we need to basically physically restrain them and put them somewhere.
Yeah. So this
came out of the same psych ward that Kanye did.
But this guy, like, it was on Ellen. He looked like there was something not right about him, and he was starting to cry about the whole thing. I mean, I understand.
Who's the guy next to him?
Traumatic experience.
That's touching his back constantly.
The other guy holding him. Like, they didn't really refer too much about him. But my theory is that there's no way that this guy did all the shootings himself. There's other people involved.
Yep.
There was a second shooter. Yep. I've looked at 3D imaging YouTube videos of people. Let's do it in the dark. 3D imaging of where everyone was looking when the gunfire was happening, and the gunfire is coming from different areas of where the actual building is.
Do you hear it? You hear it when it's like.
But they say there's lots of buildings in Vegas. It's bouncing everywhere. No, there's not a lot of buildings around where that was happening. Like, way out in front of where the concert was, there's no buildings there. It's a big open space. Yeah. And there's bullet holes in the walls at the Bellagio. But if you actually look at where the Bellagio is and where the shooter was, there's another actual building in between the Bellagio and where the shooter was. So how are there bullet holes through the walls in the Bellagio?
Look, we're never going to know what I am.
And why do you think this is? But this guy's got no motive as well. So what is the motive even behind killing him and putting someone in there to shoot everyone and then running off and letting security look like they got him?
What still stops me, though, as well, if he doesn't have a motive and it is a conspiracy and that there's someone else behind it, don't you think they're smart enough to pull this all off, then don't you think they would have been smarter as well to get someone that maybe does have a motive?
Yeah, but what would the motive possibly be?
Well, I don't know, but get someone that's maybe got a bit more of a criminal record and someone that you could is less of a mind-boggling thing where you go, he's never done anything, he's never done anything bad. Like, that's what fucks me up. Mm. But, I mean,
whenever... Just save you to make something up. So, like, okay, we're going to kill this guy and make it look like he shot all these people so that we can make this money from selling more weapons, or...
No.
What would they have done it for?
It's the... Well, it has something to do with metal detectors and security in the United States. So, obviously, you know, like, private security and stuff like that is worth a lot of money over there. You're talking about private militias and shit like that. I believe the idea is that if you can make all the places in the United States, the safest places, schools, casinos, stuff like that, feel unsafe, airports, airplanes, be unsafe, then you would have to implement more security officers, you'd have to implement more metal detectors.
So what are you saying? Like, they've gone and shot this guy and killed all these people so that more security would have to happen in Vegas, and someone
Vegas,
who sells metal detectors would make more money.
Well, not just metal detectors, but I mean just in general security and stuff. There's big money to be made. If I'm running
But that would be like lots of different companies make metal detectors. It's not like one company has the rights to it.
But there's always a top one or two out of the whole thing. I mean,
surely they're not going to put metal detectors on every single door and check people's bags at all.
You don't think so? They'll fucking rub up a 10-year-old if they feel like at the TSA, if they feel like they could have something. Don't give a fuck.
Yeah, fair enough.
Don't give a fuck.
Mm.
That's just one of the things, though. I don't think these things happen just for that one reason.
Mm. Is it something we'll just, like 9/11, everyone will keep talking about conspiracy theories?
Well, that's the idea.
And the proof will never actually come out.
That's the idea.
So maybe that's why they wanted someone who has, you know, no reason for doing it. So people will just throw all these theories out there, but no one will ever know the truth.
No, exactly. They did it to JFK as well. You'll never, ever know. They know. The JFK one's out there. You can find out exactly what happened on that day.
Mm.
Woody Harrelson's dad was you know Woody Harrelson?
Yeah,
the actor?
Woody Harrelson.
He was a
Planet of the Apes.
Known hitman.
What?
Known hitman that was involved with that on that day in the Bay of Pigs invasion. It was just a bunch of dodgy dudes that had money invested in all different sectors of society that, you know, the mafia helped JFK win that election because JFK's dad was heavily involved in the mafia and stuff. That's how they all got involved.
Yeah, I've heard about all of that. But like I've seen all the close-up photos of the shooter and where he was standing, because there is actually a picture of where he was supposedly standing, the guy that got the blame for it. What was his name again?
Oswald.
Oswald, yeah. Harvey Oswald.
Yeah. They shot him.
Yeah. But like in the distance, the photo's got him standing there in his pockets. with his hand in his pockets. And then there's a guy next to him in a shadow standing next to him, the faceless man in the hat. He possibly...
Oswald was a CIA agent or an operative, so he was obviously... He either was working for the CIA, which is government mafia, or was linked to an agency that they were using, like when you see US-backed rebels.
Yeah.
Which is just, we gave them guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But wasn't he like a double agent? Like, yeah. Didn't he have links to Russia?
Yeah, he was a double agent.
Yeah.
So it was easy to throw it on him. But where the real shots came from... the whole time.
Mm.
And I mean, if you go look this up, this may just sound like I'm crazy, but this is all documented. It's out there. Where the real shots came from were those three, who were they? They were like these homeless looking teenagers. So the idea was there was eight shooters that were coming from all different directions because they had to get the hit done properly. If they missed, you know, the security would just be heightened so highly on that you wouldn't get the chance again to do it. Mm. If you go,
can you shut that door down there? Or shut these doors.
There's some fucking
screaming
kids in the pool. Sound like they're getting murdered
in the swimming pool. Shut the fuck up. Anyway, that's it. That's another conspiracy theory that's been around for a long time. And
they shot him from the fucking, what do they call it?
From the grassy knoll.
No, the stormwater drain.
From a stormwater drain.
Three of them were under there.
But he was in a car, so you'd have to shoot upwards to get him.
The line of sight,
he could still
as he's coming down the road, they were the last ones. Everyone tried and they all missed and it was their last one.
You're joking me.
Yep. No. And there's a photo of them being taken away by police and a photo of...
What? Out of the stormwater drain?
Yep. They've got stormwater, they've got dirt and mud all up their legs.
What? How come I've never heard of this?
Yeah, go have a look at it.
Okay, like we could talk about these conspiracy theories for hours.
This one will blow your mind just quickly.
Okay. Before I add to it. Is this the same sort of thing?
No. It's linked into that story.
Okay, yeah.
His head was blown off, right? You know that his head was blown off in that video.
Yeah. It
exploded.
Yeah.
And in the autopsy photos, he has... a head. He's got a head in the autopsy photos. The mob still do it to this day. It was a body double. They'd killed someone else that looked like him and used that as the autopsy thing to get away from it. Go have a look into that.
But he's going, there's video footage of him going along waving to everyone with his wife.
No, I know. His head got blown off in that, but the body that's in the autopsy photos and the one that they buried was...
A body double.
A body double.
Why?
Because
the mob obviously knocked someone off.
They do.
Maybe they really shot him.
What is the witness protection program?
Right.
He's dead. Is he really? No, he's not. JFK is dead.
Mm.
But the body that they showed everyone was not JFK because it wouldn't have gone with the story that his head got blown up.
The CIA are going to burst through the doors at any second, so we're just going to stop talking about
this. This just sounds like craziness. I'm not saying that these are actually true, but there's a lot of evidence that points towards that going. Go on, if you're interested in this, go watch Everything's a Rich Man's Trick. That's
everything
my spiel.
Is a rich man's what?
Trick.
Okay. Mm. All right. Hey, I want to talk to you about stand-up because you have an amazing stand-up show. Because that's all comedy too because it's a fucking joke that if any of that's true, it's absolutely ridiculous. Mm. But so how did you first get into stand-up? Was it just from doing the crazy cunny videos and then all of a sudden thought, hey, there might be something in this, I'm going to do stand-up? Or did you do that first?
No, I did stand-up first. I started when I was 13 in Townsville.
13?
I was acting before that. I wanted to be an actor. And I did one film, this film called Beneath Hill 60. And
what was the film?
Yeah, do you know that film?
No, what was it about?
It's a war movie, Australian war movie I think it was, don't quote me on this one, World War One or World War Two, where and a bunch
what were you
of
doing
Aussie
in it?
Soldiers. Well, originally, this is my big break, they were filming it in Townsville. They'd raised $10 million to do it.
Hmm.
They were filming it out in a property outside of Townsville. And I'd found out who the director was and was the producer. I was emailing him from pre-production. Mm. Like, it was still 2 years till shooting. And I was emailing him going, look, I really want to be in your movie, blah, blah, blah. Eventually got an audition for one part. And do you know Jeremy Sims?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was directing it and went for the audition, did the audition, and then the audition lady or the casting director said, oh, just stay there. And she brought in Jeremy and I've looked and gone, fuck, I know that's the director.
That's the guy up that late night show called Sex. He's one of the first guys to show his naked ass on Australian television.
Oh, I didn't know that one. Now I have to go back and look. But he's come in the room and I've thought, holy shit, this must be important. He goes, sorry, I've just come out of a production meeting to come and see this. And I thought, oh, fuck, what if they think like I'm going to be the right person for the role and had to do it again. And then anyway, some cunt from Home and Away got the part.
What?
He did Home and Away. I was just fucking 12 from Townsville.
I was in Home and Away when I was 13.
Good on you. Went back at school?
Back in the day when Danny Minogue was on the show and Craig McLaughlin was the teacher. I was so excited when I found out I got the part, and I was sitting in the green room and they brought Danny Minogue in, and I'm like, oh my God, this is a girl from a show called Young Talent Time that I watched her growing up and thought she was just the hottest thing ever. Yeah. And now I'm sitting in a room alone by myself in my little virginal 13-year-old body freaking out. Danny, nice to meet you. I'm going to be in the scene with you. She's like, oh, that's nice. Oh, yeah, it should be fun. She fell asleep within seconds of me talking to her, and she slept the whole time. That was the weirdest thing. She'd been out partying or something. I don't know what the fuck happened.
What would be the equivalent of Danny Minogue today then? Walking into that.
J-Law. Oh, I've been someone younger. Like, I don't know. I can't call someone younger hot now because I'm not 13 and they're not 13. Yeah, yeah. But Jennifer Lawrence, maybe. But then when we actually did the episode that I was in was in the 80s, back when you weren't alive. There was a massive AIDS scare. People were dropping like flies, and Madonna's doing all these fundraisers, about, you know, and raising awareness for AIDS. We had these ads on TV of like a big skeleton bowling a death ball down a bowling alley, and humans standing the end and scattering, and little kids getting scattered everywhere and saying, AIDS is coming, wear protection, wear a condom. You got to see one of these ads. It's the most fucked up shit you've ever seen. And so Home and Away thought that they'd do a AIDS awareness episode. And who are they going to use as the guy to bring up the fact that, oh, I'm going to get AIDS, I'm not giving blood? Me. So I'm gonna, this little 14-year-old kid, Craig McLaughlin's like, okay, has everyone filled out their forms for giving blood? We've got to give blood in the next couple of days. And I'm like, no, I'm not giving blood. Everyone knows you get AIDS giving blood. And Danny Minogue's behind me and goes, oh, no, Gavin, that's not true. Because Gavin was my name on Home and Away.
Gavin.
Everyone knows. Do I look like a Gavin? Everyone knows that they use different needles when you give blood. And I'm like, eh, get nicked. That was my comeback. And then I got in trouble, and I think I was sent out of class. But that was my experience on Home and Away.
Oh, I always wanted to be. That's what I wanted to be. Really? I always wanted to be the mainstream guy. And then as I got
it's not
older,
too late.
No, I just got older. And I don't want to be that guy.
Don't want to be on Home and Away anymore.
No, God, no.
No, you think?
Nah. Yeah, I like doing my own thing. I like having my own outlet instead of. Because it was that one experience doing that film that, you know, being told what to do was like, ah. So with stand-up, I was watching Ellen. Yeah. She was on, like, doing a HBO special. My parents were getting divorced at the time. It was a shit place to live, a lot of fighting and, you know,
how
everything.
Old were you when that happened?
12, 13. So yeah, a lot of domestic violence and stuff that. So it wasn't that fun. And, and then living there, put it on Austar or whatever it was called at the time, Comedy Channel, and yeah, there was an Ellen special on. I didn't even know who Ellen was. I knew that it was just this random chick that had a talk show, but I didn't know why or how. And I was just sitting there. I remember laughing so much that my ribs fucking hurt and I was crying. And I don't know what it was about a, you know, 45-year-old lesbian from the south of the US that caught the eye of a 13-year-old bloke from Townsville. Wouldn't say bloke, but a kid. And I went, that's what I want to do. So mum would take, found out the Irish pub there did open mic, music open mic, and I messaged them, said, can I come in and do some comedy? They're like, great. So mum would have to sign me in at 13 every Thursday night, 10 p.m. Mum would take me down.
No way. So you're 13.
Yeah. And then it's
at an Irish pub every week doing stand-up.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
16, I wrote my first one-hour show.
16?
Mm-hmm. And sold that out. So just I had a friend that worked for my dad who was studying photography at university. I went to her and said, can you take some photos of me? Because I had a studio at the university. She said, yeah, great. And I said, can you help me make a poster? I want to do a stand-up show. She said, all right. So we took the photos. I'll show them to you after this. They're quite funny. And and we put up the posters around the school, and, you know, I got some big core flutes and put them up around town. And, 200 people came, $10 a ticket on the door. And,
$2,000 for a 13-year-old kid.
I was 16 at the 16 time, but that was still a shitload of money.
Pretty happy with that?
Yeah.
What'd you do with the money?
Don't know.
Did you have to give commission to your mum?
No commission. No commission back. Those were the days.
Back when I was about 13, 14, I was doing voiceovers because my dad, Grant Goldman, voiceover guy. And I saved up about, you know, two or three grand for doing all my, I think I did a Commodore 64 computer ad, which is like one of the first shitty computers ever invented. That was actually with Gretel Colleen as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, so all this money I had saved up, And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, hold on to it. I'm going to buy a car or whatever when I get old enough.
Yeah.
But my friend Chris Marta, he knocked my teeth out with a big stick by accident when he was waving it around. And Dad said, oh, well, that's going to cost a few grand. You can just pay for it with the money you made. So it taught me the worth of money real quick.
Yeah, yep.
But yeah, so, you know, that's a pretty good start for you. Like when you're 16, you know, making...
It was delusion.
Yeah, making all them bucks and then you just go on a tour after that?
No, it was never about the money. Mm. Not at all.
What was it about? Just making people laugh?
Delusion.
Being accepted?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Mm. I always remember the feeling of getting people to laugh at me at school and constantly wanting people to laugh at me.
Mm.
And I mean, now it's different because I'm like, oh, it's my job and yeah. You know, I'll do it when I get paid to do it. But otherwise, I don't need people to laugh at me to feel approval.
Mm.
But yeah, it was definitely this overcompensation of wanting to be approved and also not really didn't know who I was at the time. Like, you know, I'm quite, I guess, I'm very I think a lot. I'm constantly going 100 miles an hour. I'm also quite sensitive. I look at things in a different way. And being surrounded in towns by blokey dudes was sort of like, well, how do I fit in here without, you know, feeling
in a country town where, you know, everything that's cool is football and beer.
Yeah.
And along comes a kid that wants to be fun and get up on stage and be the center of attention. But you can't be cool because only the footballers in this town are cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had the same kind of thing when I was 16, 17. I got one of my first jobs in radio. I went to Taree, which is in a lot of ways like Townsville, country town. You know, it's, you know, based on football and beer and truckers and, you know, there's, you know, the Aboriginal community just out of town and, you know, it's all about farming and all that kind of stuff. And you know, here comes a show pony just off Home and Away with his peroxide of hair and, you know, thinking he's the star of the show, you know, on AM radio station 2RE, Coastal Radio 1557. And I was a target, man. Like their local football team, you know, go out on a Friday night and they'd hunt me down, want to beat the shit out of me. So did you experience a lot of that?
Or? No, I was mates with them.
You loved them.
better the devil you know than the devil you don't. Yeah. Was my opinion, and I was the jester in the whole thing. I was able to go, all right, well, everyone's talking about this. I'll, you know, make a joke about someone that did something fucking stupid at a party on the weekend. And I'll laugh, and then it was like, all right. And then I could stand back and go, because I was bullied probably grade 8, 9, didn't have any friends at all, would just sit by myself at lunch. And then, this group took me in because I remember making a joke, maybe in drama class or something like that, and they laughed at me. And I remember the day vividly where they said, you can come sit with us. And I was sitting at the basketball courts and they'd play handball at lunch. And it was all the cool girls and the cool boys. They all sat together. And I sat down and they're like, welcome to the group, like some sort of fucking black magic initiation.
Yeah.
Some Harvey Weinstein shit. And, and I was safe in high school from that point.
Did you play sport?
No, not really.
Gave it a miss?
Yeah, just wasn't good at it. I mean,
you're a performer.
Yeah. I mean, I try and exercise now for my health, not necessarily. I mean, it's good because you start to look better, but I place a lot of importance now on what I eat and exercise, but I was never sporty. Tried. I remember playing rugby league for the first time. And the first game I played, school sports, we were versed in some other school, grade 7. This fucking cunt from Weir School, his name, that was a school, Weir School, and he was like this 7 foot tall ranger. And I was on the wing. He was on the wing. He got the ball. He just starts running towards me. And it was in that moment where I'm watching him come towards me. I look out. No one else is going to, like, it's up to me to tackle him. Otherwise, he's going to score the try.
Yeah.
Just going, all right, just remember, like, just grab him by the legs.
Yeah. You get him?
He ran straight through me. Like, I'm down and his knee just went bang straight through my face. Mm. You know when you don't want to cry and it hits you?
Yeah.
You're sitting there, you're like, oh, fuck. And especially at those ages where you know, people aren't, you know, they want you to cry in those situations. It's one of those things they'll run back and tell everyone, oh, Josh got hit. But I was just holding back these tears. I was like, I'll never play sport again. Not sporty. Were you sporty?
Yeah.
You were sporty, weren't you?
Well, I mean, not. I played rugby league mainly because my dad was the ground announcer for the Manly Seagulls and, you know, loved rugby league. And I was the mascot, which was probably better at being the mascot than it was actually playing rugby league.
Yep.
Left, right, out was my best position.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't catch a high ball. Couldn't catch.
Yeah,
it's hopeless, I was injury prone.
Yeah,
I'm injured all the time. I'm injured now. I couldn't catch the ball. I dislocated my shoulder. I shattered the bone on my kneecap. So I could run. I was a fast runner. But just playing sport wasn't good. I've got a dislocated, fractured, torn ACL at the moment from an accident, a motorbike accident I had.
Dislocated, torn, broken ACL.
Oh, it's, I don't
Who
even
knows
know
what the fuck what, it is.
What is exactly is wrong with it. I know that nothing's actually broken because the I had an X-ray at 2 o'clock in the morning. It sounds a lot cooler than it is, like a motorbike accident. But I should probably tell you the story about what really happened.
Yeah, you didn't tell
so,
me.
So I was in Bondi, and it's the hipster central area of Australia.
Yeah.
And I wasn't necessarily on a motorbike. I was on a big gay red scooter.
You can't say that.
Wearing shorts. Yeah, it looked like a marriage equality float.
Okay, all right.
Why can't I say that?
Oh, I'm just, you know, if you want a job in show business, you can't say that.
Well, but it's true. It looked like, yeah. I've actually marched in the Mardi Gras.
I don't care if it's true. The truth doesn't mean politically correct.
Okay, all right. So it was just a bright
I'm
red.
I'm only fucking with you.
But gay people own the word gay. You can't say something's gay as in happy anymore.
No, I
happy
know.
Happy and gay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm riding around Bondi on my scooter looking for a place to get a massage in my shorts and T-shirt. Yep. And I pulled up outside a couple of places, and they were all, you know, booked out. So yeah. The fourth one I got to, I was really annoyed. And I went to get off a scooter, and I burnt my leg on the exhaust.
Yeah.
And as I've done that, I've spun around. And I'm like, ah! And I tore my ACL and my knee and fell on the ground in front of oncoming traffic. A bus luckily saw me and swerved and just missed my head. And then I've crawled into the gutter just like screaming, and I didn't end up getting a massage, but I was just in a lot of pain. So
it's apparently one of the most painful things to do your ACL.
It wasn't a big tough motorcycle accident.
No.
Me driving a little scooter go to get a massage.
You burnt yourself, which turned into a... Okay.
So we'll talk about the stand-up comedy and everything that you've been doing. Whereabouts is your best area to play? I mean, you're living on the Gold Coast. Do you have your biggest following here? And where would be some of the your favourite places to perform?
Everywhere.
Comedy festival?
I like Melbourne. I always like Melbourne. Melbourne's fun, especially fun. It was fun doing Cunny there because you were saying things that, like, you know, you had sort of this outer crowd of Melbourne that were like, you know, they weren't the typical Melbourne, you know, trendy, politically correct, social justice warrior. It was sort of these people on the outskirts where they didn't really have an opinion on, you know, they weren't politically charged on anything. So you could sort of get up there, and I was an outlet to go, you know, here, just come and listen to some fucked up shit. Like, it's a little bit fucking crude and stuff like that, and there's no need to get your ass all fucking in a knot. Let's just like chill out and laugh at some shit. Melbourne's great. I love the Gold Coast. I really do. Like, even before I moved here, it was always a really great place to perform. So it's probably my favourite place. Perth is also...
Where do you perform on the Gold Coast? Where's the main stand-up comedy joint?
There isn't one. There's groups that
Gold
do
Gold Coast Arts Centre?
You just hire there, yeah. I just hired there.
So you hire it out yourself and go and do a show there?
Yeah, well, my promoter hires it out because I don't have the money. But if you want to support me on Patreon, patreon.com/Josh Wade, you got your plug before, I'll fucking throw money. Yeah.
Patreon.com/onthemic.
If you've got $5 more, Mum.
She's probably not watching anymore. Well, that's cool, man. So when's the next tour?
Next year.
You only tour like once a year. What the fuck?
Mike, I tour like a lot. Like,
come on, man. There's still a few months left. What are you doing?
Well, I've just spent the whole year doing it. I started...
I listened to Joe Rogan, and he's like, every second podcast, he's like, I got more shows here, I got more shows there.
I'll do...
Shouldn't you be constantly out there doing stuff?
Yeah, so I'll do, like, at the start of the year, you have Adelaide... you have Perth Fringe Festival, so you'd normally do a week of shows there. So
America's much bigger, though, I guess.
Seven days straight there. And then after that, you do Adelaide Fringe, which is about 7 days. If you want it, you can do more, but a week's a good time. So Adelaide Fringe after that, then you've got Melbourne Comedy Festival... That comes up. That's a month long. It's 30 days straight.
So you got 30 shows.
Well, no, I don't do 30 shows anymore. My first year I did 30 shows, or 27 because you get
It's good money for every show? Or do you just get a take on the door or
really
something like that?
No, you get the money on the door, but obviously you've got expenses and then you've got commission that you have to pay and all that. So, I mean, it really depends for every different person. I mean, if you don't sell the tickets, then you come at a loss.
A mate of mine do a stand-up show in
people
lose
a lot
Comedy
of
Festival,
money.
And he was like pumped. He's got posters and everything like that. And there was like 12 people in the audience.
You have to understand that there's 500 or so shows going on in the same vicinity on the same night. every night throughout that month. So it's the competition is insane. And my first year that I did it, I remember going down the year before just to check it out. And I remember meeting Chris Lilly, and I just thought, oh, this is amazing. But I went to see another comedian called Alex Williamson. I don't know if you've seen his stuff, but he's great. He's a genius. And
did Chris Lilly do stand-up?
No, not really. I think he did Raw, but I don't think he really wanted to do.
He's just done shows that have sold all over the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Summer Heights High. What's done so well.
Yeah, I'm
good guy too.
Yeah, did you see what he went through recently with the Aboriginal kid that was hit by the car and killed? Here you go. Well, this will fuck you up. Chris fucked up real bad.
What? Chris Lilly.
I like Chris, but. I'd love to hear your opinion on this.
Yeah.
There was an Aboriginal kid that had, I believe he'd stolen a bike from somewhere. I think he was only really, really young, like a young teenager. Stole a bike or something, and then this guy got in the car and ran him down in a four-wheel drive and killed him.
Oh, yeah, I know all about that, yeah.
So this guy only got a really light sentence for what he was doing. I think he only got a manslaughter.
Yeah, which is bullshit.
It's you know, it's the definition of murder. If you run someone down and kill
them, even if the kid was being a smart ass, giving you the finger, whatever, it's not like it's a fight and the old guy punched him in the face. He killed him with a weapon, which is essentially a car. And
well,
that guy,
be a fucking man and go, oh, that's the kid that stole the bike. I'll just tell the cops. I'll follow him to where he goes, or maybe I'll just keep following him. He's on the bike. I've got a car.
Mm.
He can't keep going forever. Okay, either I'll just keep following him until the kid gets off the bike and runs, or I'll follow him home and tell his mother.
Unfortunately, I think in a lot of those regional areas, there's a bit of a backward culture.
Crime, but there is a crime culture as well.
Yeah, there's a backward culture with the average Aussie bloke who's fed up with the crime culture that happens in a lot of those indigenous communities, and they feel like they're hardly done by for a lot of other reasons and a lot of other issues that we won't go into. But it's like when I was living in Taree working on the radio, I felt like there was a constant war with this little tribe of Aboriginals in Purfleet that were given a town just outside of Taree, so that they build houses for them and they get the money.
Do you see the problem?
And they always come into town and stealing stuff and stealing cars or getting drunk. But that was just like, wasn't the entire community, but it just caused a really big divide, and there wasn't really a lot of people promoting, an integration in the community and helping them understand each other.
But like at the end of the day, what you just said then, I understand why you said it, but giving them a town, we gave them a town and we gave them money.
And that's what they all say, and they get angry about it. Well, you have a town. Do you think that's all they need to do?
No, they've never even asked for that.
Mm.
We didn't give them a town. This is their land.
Yeah.
They gave us a town.
Yeah.
Well, we took a town from them.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of like building them houses, giving them a town. I mean, it was always going to be their land.
I understand what you're saying.
They went there and built the houses for them, yeah.
I mean, we're not... Two white men on here aren't going to solve it. I don't know how that problem's going to get solved, but I do understand that there is, especially in Townsville, I think it's got one of the highest crime rates in Australia. There is a problem with youth going out there and doing it, both Aboriginal and white. What were we talking about before that? The kid. So what Chris did.
Yeah. What did Chris do? Yeah.
So the day that guy got that sentence, there were these big protests in Melbourne, lots of people out there. Chris did a song called Squashed N-Word. Yeah, with S. Dot Mouse back on, what was the show called, Marcus? Angry Boys. So Angry Boys. He played a character on Angry Boys called S. Dot Smouse, which already back in, I don't know.
So he's playing a character who's a politically incorrect character, but still.
Well, I mean, it's minstrel. I mean, it's flat
it's
out.
It's still him doing a performance.
Well, yeah, but the problem was weeks before that, TV in New Zealand had banned We Can Be Heroes. They banned Summer Heights High and Jonah from Tonga because he was playing Jonah, who is essentially, again, basically blackface. And they were saying that basically he was perpetrating racist stereotypes.
Yeah.
Now, the defense, the people that, and I've been in this position where I've defended Chris and gone, oh, well, he plays all different characters from all different walks of life.
Yeah.
There's a difference between doing that and, I suppose, you know, it's easy to do that. Easier to do it to a 16-year-old schoolgirl as it is than it would be for, you know, people that 70 years ago were lynched from trees and there's a history of minstrel acts and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he reposted...
But that's blackface, like painted black, and it's mammy and everything like that. I mean, sure, he's playing a Tongan kid and he looks a little bit tan and he's with an accent.
Okay,
but how far are we going to go with this where people aren't allowed to do accents anymore? You're not allowed to be a French guy if you're going to act in a film, or you're not allowed to put on a German accent.
I understand.
How far do we go where the lines of comedy are drawn so far back that we're just not allowed to take the piss out of anything anymore?
I understand that. I'm a staunch defender. I'm a free speech absolutist. If you want to be a racist and say stuff like that, fucking go ahead, please. Yeah. I want people to be able to say whatever the fuck they want, whether it be good or bad. Say it so we have the right to comment back.
I don't think the N-word belongs anywhere in comedy. Unless some, you know... black guy saying it on stage and doing it in a funny way, it's showing an endearment to his community and, you know, and his
brothers
and sisters.
They reappropriated a word that we used as a derogatory word. So, but regardless, Chris had played that character, which is already quite interesting because HBO funded it. And if you go back and watch the show, there's African-American actors in the show that are playing along with him when essentially you go, geez, this is actually quite weird. Like American television funded this, African-American actors played along with it, and it's Chris in blackface. So anyway, he reposted a remix video of this song that he did all these years ago called Squash N-Word, reposted it on his Twitter account the day that a guy got his sentence for manslaughter.
Did he know?
For running. Well, he said he didn't know.
No, that's understandable. He didn't know, but...
But all it did
but
was...
still, the song is bad. I mean, it doesn't sound like anything.
Well, the song is about a young African-American kid that got hit by a truck and got killed.
Yeah, well, that's what's funny about that? Anyway, talking about it and we're not seeing it in a street context.
No, we're not. And, you know, Chris was a massive inspiration to me, but I can also empathise and see why... I've got no dog in the fight, but I can understand why there are people that are extremely pissed off and annoyed and found it quite insensitive. Even if it was a genuine, oh, fuck, you know, I didn't mean to do it at that time, it probably just shouldn't have been done ever. It shouldn't have been out there.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. With comedy, you take risks. He's taken a risk that didn't work, but you can't take away from him the incredible success that he's had over there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, you know, alongside, you know, Paul Hogan is one of the best Australian comedians that's done so well worldwide.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been a good mate to me and you, and, like, whenever I've seen him around Bondi, because he lives over that way, he's always... up for a chat, which is cool. He used to be friends with a lot of people on Big Brother when I worked on the show as well. But yeah, that's cool, man. Well, I love your stand up, love your show, and I'm really excited about us doing some stuff together. But we won't give away too much. If you've watched this interview up until now, here's a little nugget of excitement for you. Can we say that we might be doing something together down the track?
I guess we're going to be doing something. I suppose
we have a venture, so stay tuned. Watch this space.
Yeah.
And if you sponsor either of us on Patreon.com, then you will be the first to find out.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And also, if you sponsor either of us on Patreon.com, what do you get?
Well, I have a group, like a private group that people can join. I do a live stream on it every week and everyone just posts certain shit. But my goal with my Patreon is to make enough money, not from Patreon, just enough money in the future that I will genuinely do this, and I'll put it on record that I'll be able to go, all right, guys, we're stopping the Patreon, and every single cent that you've donated, I'm going to go, because I can see all their names, I'll just send it back to you.
Oh, nice.
I don't want it. I just need it now to be able to keep going. But
so what do you mean, after the money... You made enough money and you're getting sponsors, you're going to backtrack it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I think so.
I'm going to do that too, Mum. You're watching this right now. But do you give away like free tickets to your shows or anything?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's all, you're the first to know about everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've just changed the logo of the show. We just rebranded the whole show. And in the group, they were the ones that chose which logo we were going for. So it's sort of, it's a creative venture among all of us. They're literally producers of the show along with me. So, yeah, it's great to have that community there of people that are all about it, and they communicate with each other, which is awesome because I'm not always able to do it because I'm pretty busy.
Cool.
So they're on there. Everyone knows each other. It's just a big fucked up family.
You built your own little community.
Cult. I call it a cult.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Nice.
I'm like, what's his name? L. Ron. You can call me L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh, thank you, L. Ron Hubbard.
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be a religion soon.
Yeah. Yeah,
so it's tax deductible to make a donation to the religion of Josh Wade.
Yeah, you went.
Are you a Wadeist? Yes, I am.
Wadeist.
I'm 100% Wadeist. Thank you.
That's got a ring to it.
Bless you. You could come up with your own little blessing sign.
Yeah, it'll just be that.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm the latest. Fuck you. Hey, changing the topic completely, can you please tell me what the story is with you proposing to Chappelle Corby?
Oh, okay, yeah. Chappelle's great. Hello, Chappelle.
Are you in love with Chappelle?
I think Chappelle's a great chick. I won't go into what really happened, but Chappelle is just an everyday chick, as normal. The whole family is as normal as you can get.
Are you avoiding the question, are you and Chappelle together or not?
No, we're not together.
What's proposing to her with a BB bottle?
I think it was like stealing candy from a baby.
Where'd you run into her? Or were you actually dating? Oh, she came to your show?
Yeah. Her and the family came to my show.
Is she nice?
Yeah, of course she is.
Full on bogan, weirdo?
No, Mike. No.
Pot smoker?
No.
Drug smuggler?
No. Don't push those agendas.
Well, she is a convicted drug smuggler.
Are you getting paid to say that?
Well, that's the first thing that they say at all the TV networks.
Of course it is.
Convicted drug smuggler, yeah. Chappelle Corby.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, she was convicted and in jail for a long time in Indonesia.
Expandable.tv. Yeah, so are a lot of people that don't do crimes. But anyway, I won't get too far into it. But
I'll sum it up for us.
I just said the website.
You think she was innocent?
Yeah, she was 100% innocent.
Wow, okay.
Yep. Yep.
Even though there was all the drugs in her body bag, she didn't put it there.
No, she didn't.
No.
I mean, if I get on an aeroplane and I've got a ticket that says my bag weighs 21 kilos and then I get to a certain country and it weighs 26 kilos and they won't DNA test my drug bag and then for some reason all the security cameras go missing at the airport that day,
okay.
I'd probably...
Did that happen, did it?
Yeah, of course.
What's that website again?
Expandables.tv.
Who put that website together? I don't know.
But
you did.
Yeah. I got some time.
Wow. Well, let's get off conspiracy theories and talk about a few things that have been happening in the Australian press of late. Lisa Wilkinson, she just got fired from the Today Show. Well, her contract was not renewed. And it's come out that it was all about pay equality, gender pay equality. And
bullshit.
I mean, I think it's bullshit. I mean, I love Lisa Wilkinson. I've worked with her before. As much as she gets a little bit crazy left sometimes in her arguments, I think she's a lovely lady, does a lot for the community. She's done a lot for women in the industry. She, editor of the Huffington Post, and, you know, she was the editor of Women's Weekly for many years, and I think 10 years on the Today Show.
Yeah, it was a long time.
More than that.
A long time.
Which is amazing to be getting up at, 3 o'clock every day. The morning and preparing yourself for breakfast television. She's done some great interviews.
Yeah.
But to say that you're worth exactly the same amount of money as someone who's, won a Gold Logie and hosts of primetime shows that have, millions of viewers, when you're only doing that one other show, I think it's a bit rich.
Yeah, I think...
especially in the current climate where the pie for the money for the TV industry is shrinking.
So
and
much.
You go, hey, I want more money. I think but you got a different take on it?
No, I think Carl's contract's coming up soon.
Mm.
Carl's done. I mean, if you look at him, that guy's weathered as hell. I mean, he's lost his... I don't know if he lost it, but, he's... him and his wife got a divorce.
Yeah.
And I would say... I wouldn't say it's the only issue, and it's very... I don't think it's probably the right thing for me to do to have my input on someone else's relationship, but I will.
why not?
I would say waking up at 4 a.m. every morning and then doing, he's a workaholic.
Would
it would definitely put some sort of strain on that relationship.
Totally.
But he's a workaholic. He's been doing it for fucking ages. I think he's been doing it longer than her. He's got that, he's got the primetime shows, whatever. I believe that Carl will take a break, take a step back for a little bit once his contract's up. His contract finishes after hers.
Mm.
I believe that it's a good news story for Lisa. I don't think it was necessarily over a pay distribution. I reckon her and Carl would have sat down and gone, look, this is coming up. Like, what should I do? They're friends. They're with each other every day. I'm sure they get a lot. They're not friends. Maybe not.
I don't think so. Yeah. I've worked with them. And, I just caught a vibe. I didn't really see, a really good energy there. And,
Is that like someone, though, that you're with all day, every day, that's like you've lost that? Anyway, I think it was much smarter of her. She's taken $500,000 more from Channel 10 to
Has
do the
Sunday. Has she, though?
Yeah.
To do what?
The
One
Sunday.
Show a week?
Yeah, I'd fucking take that because if
Bullshit.
She...
Bullshit. There's no way in the world Channel 10 would be able to afford to pay her that much money to host a show once a week. No way.
Well,
I used to work at Channel 10. I know CBS have taken over, but I really don't think that they've got that kind of money.
Well, that's what I thought was reported, but...
But I mean, I think if someone's doing a job alongside... A woman's doing a job alongside a man, and they got the same experience, and they...
Same job, paid the same.
They pay them the same.
Yeah. But show business is different.
Dave Hughes, just his co-host, Kate... stand-up comedian,
yeah,
Kate Musey.
Yeah.
Anyway, he took a pay cut because they couldn't afford to pay her more to match his pay, so he took a pay cut on his show.
But he shouldn't be the one getting the pat on the back for that.
Yeah, but...
I mean, it's good. It's great that he did that, and it's a statement to make, but at the same time, like...
She's doing the same job as him, and she's a very experienced, amazing woman. He hosts the Logies and does incredible stand-up. So, yeah, pay him the same. Kyle and Jackie O, I mean, Jackie O knew that she wasn't getting paid the same.
Really?
Put her foot down and ended up getting the same amount of money.
Good. Good on her. That's how it should be.
So it's good that the world is changing and, you know, women are being looked after a lot more than they were. But do you think that the whole gender equality issue is being taken too far? Or is that a good thing, is being taken too far to bring back, you know, an equilibrium where it should be?
I think it's one of two things. I'm sure we've spoke about this before, Marcus, but I guess it's like...
Mike
and Marcus.
it's Marcus over there.
I know, yeah, fuck it. He's here. He's the studio audience.
There's a camera and a camera.
You know, when you listen to like these, you know, the people that talk about the gender wage gap myth, it does exist in certain areas like Hollywood and stuff like that. Like, they're in these sort of industries where you're self-employed, it's a lot easier for these producers and stuff like that and, you know, executives to pay women less money.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, if I'm a cleaner and I've been cleaning for 2 years and I'm a male and you're a cleaner and you're a woman and you've been cleaning for 2 years, that doesn't exist. It's illegal.
It doesn't make sense.
It's illegal.
I think we're talking about it and it's on the news and people are going, oh, yeah, you know, Carl should be being paid the same as Lisa or whatever you think on the subject, or, you know, Hughesy and Kate or Carl and Jackie or whoever they are deserves the same amount of money, gender equality. But those people are earning millions. When you're talking about someone who's a bank teller or drives Uber or, you know, works down at the local chemist or the 7-Eleven, they're all getting the same money. Yeah, and you're right, it's completely illegal
to
pay someone any different. If you're in Parliament, they have a standard wage. And they go, oh, this lady shouldn't get paid as much as if she's Prime Minister. They have a Prime Minister wage. I think it's $1 million a year or something like that.
Yeah, and if you're caught doing it, then, you should be punished for it. But, it's an interesting one. And obviously then you go and look at statistics and women choose to do different jobs to what men choose to do, just in general. It's not black and white is what I'll say. I don't necessarily have an opinion on it because I don't know enough about it. But I would lean to it being a bit more. Have you heard about like fourth wave feminism?
No, what's
do you know what this? Well, this is what is happening right now.
Oh, yeah, don't worry what this is.
Inside of feminism, you have people that are transgender, so male to female, that are fighting for rights against feminists, because they want the same rights that other feminists have. And then inside of that, you have black feminists that believe they don't have the same equality as white feminists.
It's hurting my brain.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we not talk about this stuff anymore?
It's
this
is just itself,
ridiculous.
And it's exciting.
If anyone's even looking at this, but speaking of people fighting and getting into trouble in Hollywood, poor old Harvey Weinstein.
Don't poor old.
Oh, what happened? Harvey, you made so many incredible movies, the Pulp Fiction, all the Miramax films, and the, you know, discovering of, you know, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, and he's done so many incredible things, but all along the way he's been
a serial
touching
rapist.
Touching women and feeling women and pushing them into hotel rooms. And the LA County Sheriff's Department just announced that they're going to be pressing charges on him over the rape of an Italian actress. There's recordings that have come out that people have held back saying, oh, you know, of him saying, you know, just let me in your hotel room or let me just give you a massage and stuff like that. I mean, but this is something that has been going on in Hollywood and the entertainment industry for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And it's great that finally Hollywood's coming out and speaking up about it. They've been very scared to speak out about it for a long, long time. But that's because they don't want to bite the hand that feeds them yes. Russian caviar.
I can understand
you
that.
You know what I mean? Because you're going to get, oh, hang on. This guy, Harvey Weinstein, is going to give me something that I could never imagine in my wildest dreams. He's going to make sure that I get the front row tickets at the Super Bowl. He's going to make sure that I get to meet Bruce Springsteen if I want to go to that concert. Yep. He's going to pay me millions of dollars for my script.
Yep.
Okay, he did something in a hotel room with a girl. I'm not going to talk about that. That's, you know...
No dog in my fight.
People have turned a blind eye to it for too long. And now people aren't going to get away with it as much anymore. It's still going to happen. They're not going to get away with it as much anymore. And it's going to change.
I think... Well, he's a scumbag. And he always was a scumbag.
Yeah, but everyone knew that.
Everyone knew.
He's a talented scumbag. But that doesn't mean that he should be able to get away with what he did.
No way. I mean, you look at someone like Bill Cosby and someone like Harvey Weinstein. They could have been... some of the biggest rapists, not just in the entertainment industry, but in the world.
Mm, yeah.
They got that because of their position, they got away with it for so long. Mm. I mean, how many rapes does someone get away with before they get fucking locked up for being a serial rapist? These are people that have done it systematically, institutionally, for years. It was in his contract with people that if he fucked someone, or if he, you know, did something, he would be fined $250,000. If he did it again, $500,000. Like, it just kept going. People knew about it. I want to know what the fuck Harvey Weinstein did and who the fuck fucked him off that they went, all right, today's your day.
Yeah, well his brother runs the Miramax, the Weinstein company.
And he acted like he didn't know shit. Yeah. Get fucked. They're all in on it.
They all knew.
They're all in on it.
So should they all be taken down for it as well?
Fucking oath they should.
I think if they knew that something was going on for so long and that company, Miramax, the Weinstein Group, they have made billions of dollars.
Do you have a sister?
Yeah.
Okay. How would you feel about the person that raped your sister if you knew that someone in their family knew the entire time and didn't do anything about it? Would you want to fucking kill him?
I want to kill him, yeah.
Fucking oath. So that's, they're in the exact same vein. Yeah. Fuck them off. Fuck the lot of them off. And I hope to God that it is the domino that falls, that is the house of cards goes down, because Harvey Weinstein is just one of many. Mm. He is the tip of the iceberg, and what he's done is nothing compared to what else is going on. Mm. We're talking about some really, really, really fucked up shit that is just far beyond that.
But when we say it's been going on for a long time, I mean, not just to women, I mean, predominantly women, but I mean, you look at the two Coreys and what happened to them as they were growing up. I mean, Corey Haim and Corey
Feldman.
I mean, that it's just the stories that have come out from when they were making films and directors molesting them and doing all sorts of horrible things. And they were basically shunned and ignored by Hollywood.
When
they tried to say, look what happened to us and how our lives were ruined.
Yep.
It's sickening.
Every one of them. Look at Britney Spears. Look at every single one of them and tell me that it didn't happen to them.
Mm. It's messed up.
It absolutely makes my blood boil to the point where I just don't want to be in it.
A lot of times you would see, you know, like all these beautiful women are coming out and saying, you know, I made all these films my whole life. I got my first break because Harvey Weinstein gave me my first feature, but he's a dirt bag, slime bag, and... you know, and he touched me and tried to push me in a hotel room.
Yep.
But would we know who those women are, and would they have had a career if it wasn't for him? I mean, would that woman still made the same choice?
Yeah, I think the market reacts to talent no matter what it is.
Mm.
If I have an app...
But there's an old saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And he's abused his position of power, sure.
Yes and no.
But women have the opportunity to say, no, I'm not going in that hotel room with you.
If I make the next Facebook, all right, yeah, it's going to fast-track me to get there better if I put it out to the market. But if it's good, if what I'm offering is good, people will take it no matter what. People didn't give a fuck if Gwyneth Paltrow knew Harvey Weinstein or not. The consumer didn't. Maybe the industry did. We didn't care. She was a good actress.
Yep.
We would watch her. We'd watch all of them. Mm. So, no, I don't think that that's a reasonable...
But a lot of people are like Weinstein in their position of power. I mean, they've had one or two movie hits, and all of a sudden they've got this worldwide network that they can promote all their films to, and whether or not they think they can just feel someone up or something else that's disgusting and there's no excuse for... a lot of those people are like, well, what can you do for me? You know, I know that I'm going to be able to, you know, make you famous. And he promised it to a lot of women, and it's coming out that he touched a lot of women inappropriately, And he never even gave him any work.
Can we just remember as well that Harvey Weinstein wasn't the first one to do this, and also wasn't... Well,
where did the term casting couch come from?
Well, yeah, and why, you know, no one's born that way, I don't think. So, like, he wasn't born, and as a five-year-old's running around going, I'm going to feel up every woman in Hollywood. So is it not Harvey Weinstein is fucked, but is he fucked because of the system as a whole is not right? I think that's the root cause. People are going to continue. People are going to keep doing it as long as that system keeps going. Taking down Harvey Weinstein ain't going to stop shit.
Yeah.
But we like to pat ourselves on the back and think so. Good day for us. And
Hollywood is changing so much, and I think the days of all the Weinstein kind of crap going on, they haven't gone. You're still going to see that happening, but it's going to be reported a lot more, and it's a good thing that it came out, because women aren't going to have to put up with that shit as much. Hopefully, fingers crossed. But
I think the modeling industry must be much worse.
Oh, the modeling! Some of the stories I've heard about the modeling industry are ridiculous.
Yeah, it's past
like
Hollywood.
Photographers are like just expect to get a blowjob if they're going to hire a model. You know. Like one for, because I got a few friends that are photographers. One photographer was telling me that there's this guy in Paris that he has an assistant that comes over and gives him a towel to clean himself up, you know, after the model that comes in to do a photo shoot does the photo shoot, and he just wops it out. Just there you go. See you later. Thanks a lot.
You know that Terry Richardson guy? Have you seen that guy? Terry Richardson. He takes photos of a lot of celebrities, but they're always really like... He's got this exact look. Just, I'll show you him later on. He's an interesting guy. But, well, Hollywood's fucked.
Yeah, it is fucked. But on the good side of Hollywood, let's say some positive stuff.
Yeah.
What have you been watching on Netflix? Because I just started watching a show only a couple of nights ago called My College Friends. Do you know the comedians Key and Peele?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So, is it Key? Key, I can't remember his first name.
Yeah.
So I only started watching it, but it's one of the funniest shows on Netflix, which you're definitely going to watch. And another one called The Good Place, which is hilarious. It's about going to heaven and then realizing that they've got your name confused with someone else and you're not supposed to be there. Two awesome shows, highly recommend. Do you watch a lot of Netflix?
We were talking last night and I was like, I have Netflix. When I first got it, I was all about it. And then now I hardly even open it. I mean, I started watching House of Cards, of course. I loved House of Cards.
Conspiracy, of course you would.
I was like, oh, yeah, of course this is how it works. I watched a little bit of American Horror Story, and then now, you know, I just don't have... I feel like I don't have the time to consume myself in a show. I'd love to, but, I mean, YouTube's great because I can... You know, some people put 10-minute things up, and I can... I have those little spaces in the day where I can consume that, but otherwise, I just feel like I don't have the time, nor
What about the podcast? You mean you got a podcast? You listen to other people's?
I listen to...
Joe Rogan?
Yeah, of course.
Ben Shapiro?
Russell Brand.
Any of them? Yeah. Russell Brand. Do you watch his Trues thing?
Yeah, I do. Sometimes he goes a little bit left on me, but...
He doesn't, he?
Well, there's an interesting thing about Russell, because I've seen a lot of people talk about him being associated with the Fabian Society, and you know, he's married to, I don't know who it is, but she's got a lot of connections because her family are a part of. Russell's interesting because I love Russell to death, but then I've also heard people make some interesting statements that he is like an Alex Jones, where it's controlled opposition. But I also, when I watch Russell and I listen to him, and I you know, you look into someone's eyes and you go, He genuinely believes this. I don't think, and I think maybe he might be aligned to. He's got the number 33 tattooed on his wrist.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, he says it means... I mean, I think Jesus died when he was 33, and he says that's what it means. But it's also, you know, Freemasonry is, you know, the top number there is 33, and you know, 33 in the occult is quite a prevalent number in numerology and all those different things. So. Interesting guy. I love just listening to him speak, regardless of...
Yeah, he's very intelligent. He comes up with some interesting points. As do you, Josh Wade. So what else were we going to talk about? I wrote a whole list of shit on my phone, but we're actually using that as the light.
yeah, I know.
Let me just check.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Josh Wade, that was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it was fun. I think we went hard. We went... Harvey got it. I gave it a little bit to old Harbs.
Harvey copped it.
Who else copped it?
We talked about...
Woody Harrelson's dad got it for
a
second.
Woody Harrelson. Lots of people copying it left, right and centre.
Yeah. Everything's a rich man's trick. You gave it to Chappelle for a bit, which I don't for that.
Yep.
Why did you do that for?
Because, you know, I have some faith in our authorities, and I just have a feeling that there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there, and I just think that might be one of them that might not be true.
One of them that won't be, like, are you putting that in the flat earth?
I just think,
bucket?
You know, like, I know a lot of people on the Gold Coast that said that, you know, her dad was dealing drugs and, you know, everyone knew about it. She was in on it. She actually knew it was in the body bag and the bodyboard bag.
I know there's also a lot of evidence to say that that wasn't the case. I just don't know. I think the one thing that fucks me up is, you know, if it's $50,000 worth of weed in Australia, that same amount is worth $5,000 in Bali. Like, why would you take
Why would you take it the other way? That doesn't make sense.
I'll go look into it.
Okay, well, I've got to do a little bit of research.
Yeah, I'm not saying...
And I guess talking to you, I shouldn't trust the authorities as much as I should.
Not with that one.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I look forward to our collaboration that you will hear more about in the coming months. And if you like basketball, come and watch the City Kings game. I'm a courtside announcer. Contact me on Patreon and I'll give you some free tickets maybe. And if you get involved and hit your Patreon as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you like
him.
Estranged thinking, paranoid thoughts, schizophrenic rants. And my channel is the place for you.
And the 11th of November at the Sydney Comedy Club at Luna Park. Come and see me talk more crazy out there shit on stage.
Yeah.
Thank you. Awesome.
All right.
Josh Wade on the mic.
Mike Goldman on his microphones. These are his.
It's mine. Thank you.